Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the December 11th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes.
I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold. I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I can't get warm without your hand to hold. The radiator's hissing, still I need your kissing to keep me from freezing each night. I got a hot water bottle, but nothing I got will take the place of you holding me tight. I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold. They told me to shovel more coal in the boiler. They told me to shovel more coal in the boiler. They told me to shovel more coal in the boiler, but that don't do no good.
Shovel more coal in the boiler. Oh, my God. The climate change people are going to get that song outlawed. Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the December 11th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. This is our Christmas party show. Just an opportunity to get together, to chat, to just think about the past year and think about what's coming up in the new year. Just some administrative things, get them out of the way. If you're interested in calling into the show, the number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat. And I do have a few callers. I'm going to recognize them in a few minutes. What I want to do tonight is, I call this the Christmas party show, and, well, what happens at Christmas parties? I mean, people who have a common interest or a common bond get together, discuss the news, remember what has gone on during the past year, and gossip. So that's kind of the agenda for tonight. We're not going to do any deep structure policy discussions or analysis. We're just going to get together and chat and kind of talk about whatever comes into our heads. I mean, I have a few ideas about what to talk about if the conversation is light. And that has mainly to do with the economy, but a little bit with the presidential race and Donald Trump. Before I go into any of that, I'll start recognizing my callers. I have two from area code 907. 907, twice,
yes,
who are you?
I can't have tomatoes.
Oh, my God.
It's Charlie Angel.
Oh, okay. And there were two of you from the 907 area code.
Well, it may be somebody else that probably doesn't want to talk to you, just want to listen.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I will.
That's Alaska.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Alaska.
Johnny, it's Natalie, the Consigliere.
Oh, my God. You can't expose yourself.
I did expose myself.
Holy crap.
Just,
well, this show is much safer than Johnny's show, so that's okay.
Well, go ahead, Natalie.
This is a gun-free zone here, so, you're
going to get attacked.
You're in total safety for those who are listening in chat. in the archive. Johnny is the host of Free Fire Friday, which is a show on Second Amendment and firearms on Blog Talk Radio, also broadcasts on Friday night. In fact, it just concluded half an hour ago. And I say host, but, you know, sometimes he insists on being called the star, but I'm not ready to go that far. He's the host. And we have his consigliere, who I know likes to be discreet, so I won't draw her into the conversation. And we also have area code 703. Who are you?
That would be Jaded.
Oh, my God. Jaded by politics. So Jaded, for anyone who's on Twitter, does not need any introduction. She is a Twitter queen, terror of the Republican establishment and its allies, and a blogger at Unified Patriots, one of the havens that people fled to from red state when they were going
through.
I'm sorry?
I said, what a lovely introduction. Thank you.
So anyway, like I said, my goal for tonight is just to get together and chat a little bit, and I have some thoughts so I'll go into, and I guess I'll go into my business discussion first, since I do cover a lot of business issues on my show. And the theme of office parties, well, anybody who works knows that the office party is always one of the primary ways of getting connected as to what's really going on in an organization. I follow a number of companies on the internet. I work for a company. I retired from another one. So I'm just going to go into a few of things about what might be discussed at their Christmas parties, just to give a flavor of what's going on in the economy. As far as American Airlines is concerned, where I retired from, they had a blockbuster year, absolutely raking in the cash with the decline in oil prices, and of course that jet fuel tracks oil prices. The merger is going very well, but the people there are going through what always goes through in a merger, which is, you know, the prospect of redundancies and restructurings and whatever. And in fact, I have a lot of contacts at the company, and I called there a little while ago, a week or two ago, and I mean, the people were in a very bad mood, which is kind of paradoxical because the company is doing so well. And that is not an uncommon phenomenon in corporate America these days. Companies are doing well, but the people who work in them are somewhat stressed. Another company I follow is Apple. Blockbuster year for them with their new iPhone. But the buzz on Wall Street and so much speculation, well, what's next for Apple? Because they are very reliant on the iPhone. And if for some reason the product cycle of the iPhone wobbles a little bit and people don't buy the next release in the same volume that they bought the current one, that could spell big trouble for the employees and the shareholders. Follow JCPenney. They're going through more layoffs, so I bet people are networking at that Christmas party. And they're also, retail in general had a disappointing Black Friday, the big shopping day after Thanksgiving, so that tends to be a bummer for the whole retail sector. So I imagine that's going to be the buzz at their Christmas parties. I work at part-time at HR Block, and at our gatherings, the subject is the coming tax season, and Congress is Every year there is a routine in Congress where there are a lot of provisions in the tax law which are called tax extenders, and a lot of them are set to expire every year. And so nobody really knows what the law is going to be in which we do tax returns in the following season until very late in December and sometimes in January, when the final touches are put on to what will constitute the tax laws for 2015. So that's always a big buzz item for us. And, of course, we always talk about the difficulties that our clients have with the complexity of the tax law. And one of the things I'm going to be doing in future shows is having a little segment called Taxing Experiences, where I go into kind of nuts and bolts things that individual taxpayers may want to focus on and discuss when they have their taxes done. And tonight, just very briefly, one of the biggest headaches that taxpayers have are taxpayers who have travel expenses, because in order to deduct them, they have to be properly documented, and that documentation has to be pretty thorough. For every trip that you make, you need to have the place, the date, the purpose, generally who did you see, receipts, and if you're claiming mileage, you have to have a good, reliable mileage log, which is a point-to-point log by date from, you know, from destination B to, you know, to destination C. How many miles was it? Who did you see? Why did you see them? What, you know, showing that there really was a business purpose for the trip. And if you have a log like that, chances are that if your return is ever audited, you won't have any painful adjustments. And then the last thing, Christmas party, I was imagining in my mind going to, especially since this is Texas and it's an energy state, are all the oil company Christmas parties. And what I think is going on there is feverish networking, because just as the airlines are booming because of the fall in energy prices, the oil and gas patch is really approaching depression levels in terms of the solidity of their business model and their revenues. So there have been and will be lots of layoffs, lots of capital asset write-downs. Everything is cyclical in our economy, and the oil patch was a very bright thing during the first few years of the Obama administration, where even despite all of his regulatory insanity, the energy sector really did well. Well, now the cycle is there's so much production, and the oil price cartel with OPEC is breaking down, so huge glut in energy, and of course that's making its way felt in the energy sector. And we have another caller, area code 609. Caller 609, who are you?
It's Liberty.
Ah, another veteran of Free Fire Friday. Well, your voice must be rested from that discussion, because I don't think you had a chance to say very much. That's one thing we have to give Johnny credit for. Some of his guests emerged from that show very rested. Well, Anthony, it's nice to see you here. I think it's your first time ever calling into this show. So, like I said, I don't have a big agenda. I do have a few more people in chat. Brandy Monica also came over from Free Fire Friday. Jim Kelly is in chat. Want to say hello to them. So on the general subject of the economy, a couple of more things, and I'm going to play a clip, then I'll have my Donald discussion, and then I'll open up to discuss whatever people want to discuss. On the economy, we've seen a considerable drop in the past couple of years in the unemployment rate, but that is only possible because of the record-breaking decline in the labor force participation rate. So the economy is not robust. It's better than it was a few years ago, but there are still constant layoffs. And since I follow business for my blogging, I read about these layoffs all the time. Now, people are finding jobs more rapidly when they're laid off than they did a few years ago, but they're still exposed to a lot of uncertainty during that job search, and those layoffs are continuing. And then the other thing I want to mention is that the government continues to stimulate the economy with massive levels of deficit spending and low interest rates, and also increased taxes, direct and indirect. There has been a huge increase in tax liability under the Obama administration. Some of it was related to Obamacare. A good part of it was a general effort to raise tax rates for the more affluent, and part of it was the Obamacare taxes, which really can bite the middle class if they don't have qualifying insurance under Obamacare. And the Obamacare tax is hitting its maximum rate in 2016, which is 2.5%. So if you don't have qualifying insurance in 2016, you get taxed at 2.5% of your income, less your filing threshold, which is a little over $12,000. So just for argument's sake, let's say you made $100,000 and for some reason you don't have health insurance, your tax would be assessed on $100,000 less or $12,000 or so, $88,000 at 2.5%. That is not a small amount of money. Now, most people don't make close to $88,000, but even if they make, $40,000, $50,000, and they get in the Obamacare trap, that results in a lot of taxes for them. So, as a kind of humorous clip, I'm going to play something from because of all the job losses and restructurings that keep happening, I have a clip from the old Honeymooner show, one of my favorites, which has to do when Ralph Cramden loses his job at the bus company, and Ralph and Alice are deciding, are they going to make ends meet? And this is about 5 minutes, and so I hope you enjoy it. It'll take a couple of minutes, a few seconds to load.
I take back my offer to you of a job in the sewer. Besides, you wouldn't even fit through the manhole.
Get out!
Somewhere, Alice, in this world, there was a straitjacket waiting for that man.
Ralph, never mind him. What are we going to do? What are we going to live on until this layoff is over? Suppose it does last a month.
Well, we just got to face it. Just have to cut out this high living.
High living?
Yes, high living. We'll just have to cut out a few luxuries.
All right. How about you giving up bowling?
Now, let's not get panicky. Let's face this thing intelligently. There's just one way to do it. Got to find out how much money we owe and how much money we have. Then we deduct the money that we owe from the money we have, and the money we have left is what we're going to live on. Now, where are the bills? And I'll start fixing it up.
In the top drawer.
Very simple. Nothing to get excited about. Just remain calm.
Well,
Well, here. That's 495. Here. 195 FD. And a high.
All right. That comes to $186.32. Now, that's what we owe. Now, we have to deduct that from what we have. Now, this is an emergency, so we got to take into consideration all the money we have. Whatever we have in war bonds, whatever we have in a bank, whatever you have hidden around here. All the money we got in our Christmas club, all of it. Now, all of that lumped into one big ball amounts to what?
$12.83. You sure that's all of it?
That's right, Ralph. That's all, including three Indian head pennies and a 2-cent stamp.
You don't know how to handle money.
Of course I don't. I never had any practice.
You squandered it, Alice. You squandered it.
Squandered?
Yeah, squandered. I know what you do when you got money, Alice. I know what you do. You run right out and buy some clothes. That's what you do.
Don't deny it,
Alice. Because I got the proof that you buy clothes. Here. Is this middle drawer yours?
That's right.
Is it yours? All right. Is it jammed with stuff, huh? Everything you bought? Now, is the bottom drawer mine?
That's right.
All right. In there is one pair of pants. Why is one pair of pants of mine in that drawer?
Because one pair of your pants is all that'll fit in there. I did not spend that money on clothes, and you know it. Besides, how far do you think $62 a week will go?
Will you shut your big mouth and stop yelling my salary? I don't want the neighbors to know how much I'm making.
$62 a week. $62 a week. $62 a week.
Will you stop that? I don't want my salary to leak out.
Your salary couldn't drip out.
Oh, you're flirting with death.
You can rant and rave and scream and yell all you want to, but it's not helping matters any. Now, let's face it, Ralph, we're in trouble. What are we going to live on until this layoff is over?
You're so smart, you tell me.
All right. I will tell you, but you're not going to like it. Now, nobody's going to give you a job, Ralph. Just like you said, they'll find out when the layoff is over you're going back to work for the bus company. But there is no reason in this whole earth why I can't get a job.
That is out. O-U-T, out. While you are my wife, you will never work. I have my pride.
I'm getting a job, Ralph, no matter what you say.
I'm not going to argue with you, Alice, because first of all, what could you possibly do to earn any money?
Well, there's plenty that I could do, Ralph. I took a commercial course in school. I still remember my shorthand and my typing. I can get a job as a secretary.
Oh, you can. And who do you think is going to do the housework around here?
Yes.
Oh, no! No, sir. No, sir. Sir, sir, sir. No, sir. Not me.
Oh, yes, you are, Ralph. I'm getting a job, and you're going to do the housework.
Ha, 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 hearty, ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha. You hear that, Alice? Har, 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 har,
har, har, har, har, har, har, har, har, har, har, har, har, har,
har, har, har, har,
har. Well, that's a classic honeymooners comedy, you know, bumbling Ralph, bumbling Norton, and, you know, tart-tongued Alice, who has to keep the whole thing together. You've just seen, ladies and gentlemen, two things. Number one, if you listen to those, the prices and salaries they were talking about, you've got a good gauge of the inflation that took place from the time that show was done in 1955 to now, 60 years later. And you also got the beginning of the explanation of our obsession with immigration, because one of the things that has made the two-earner family possible, especially in the upper income levels of our economy, is all the domestic help, relatively low-wage domestic help that is made possible by immigration. So I thought on a reflective show like tonight, I would play that for a laugh and also, kind of an interesting indicator of how we've evolved from the 50s until now. Okay, and then the other subject I wanted to go into tonight, and before we go to our free discussion, this is very brief. This is on politics. And, of course, apart from the San Bernardino shooting, Donald Trump has been dominating the news cycle, whatever the cycle is. And I think a big mistake people make, both establishment Republicans, movement conservatives, and also, you know, the media people as well, is that they are not distinguishing where Trump is concerned between the shtick and the strategy. No one understands publicity like the Donald. And a lot of his statements are calculated to be outrageous. They are calculated to be that way. He knows they're going to be that way. He's doing it on purpose. His bold statements do not represent where he literally expects to be at the end of the negotiation. I mean, this is the guy that wrote The Art of the Deal. But the bold statements are setting the framework and the direction of where he wants to move. And they ensure that the other side has more distance to travel from their opening position than he does by the time the deal is struck. So that's what, and the way he gets away, why he gets away with it is that it's very carefully calculated. He makes the outrageous statements in areas where he is sure to get mass public support or to be validated by events. So unlike other politicians who say, you know, kind of outrageous things and they really get slammed for it, because he picks and chooses so carefully, it always seems to work for him. He isn't making the outrageous statements on arcane matters. He's making them on areas where he knows the tide is coming in his direction. And that is why he is constantly running rings around both the GOP establishment and a lot of the movement conservatives who do not trust him because they don't think he's a real ideological conservative, which he isn't, because he is a centrist nationalist. He doesn't pretend to be anything else. And in the current lay of the land, where the emphasis is on national security and getting the economy going again, I think people are going to be more inclined to trust him than they are an ideological movement conservative. So on that note, I have another caller I'm going to recognize, and then we will go into our free discussion for as long as people want to discuss. Area code 845, who are you?
Hi, it's Mike from New York.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Mike was also on Free Fire Friday, and as a call-in guest. And I guess I should mention, as far as Free Fire Friday is concerned, they had a very long discussion on, well, there's a technical firearms discussion, although it was kind of funny, too, not quite all technical.
Yeah.
It was colorfully technical, let's put it that way. And then in the second part of the show, there was a discussion on voting, should you vote? This is a perennial on Free Fire Friday. Are you just enabling a bad system by voting, or are you actually helping to move things in the right direction by voting? And, you know, the role of the Constitution and the Second Amendment and everything else. So very good show to listen to if you can find that in the Blog Talk Radio at www.blogtalkradio.com/Free Fire Friday, and then all of the shows come up. And, of course, tonight's show was December 11th or 12th, because I think Blog Talk Radio, if you recall, when you hear the English lady speak, they're on Greenwich time. It's run out of London, the server, I think. So and then also area code 703.
Yeah, might... I came back. It dropped me.
Oh, okay. That's jaded. Okay.
Yep.
So I've done, you know, my prepared remarks, and I thought what I'll do is make the rounds briefly among all the callers. And, Jaded, I'll start with you. What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Pushing Trump to give cover to Cruz to beat the crap out of GOP Inc. so that they burn in the fires of hell. Other than that, not much.
Yes, Jaded is known for the reticence with which she expresses her views. So,
but that's basically what I've been doing. I mean, I would vote for Trump if he is the guy. Cruz is my guy. I think he gives cover to Cruz, as you see Cruz coming up, and I think that's great. And Cruz has been smart not attacking him, because you're right about him. It is the art of the deal. And he does pin it, literally, to events. And he knows who his base is. I mean, the base is the American public. They're sick of being PC'd to death by both parties. So... he's brilliant. I mean, I went and saw him here in Manassas, Virginia. He came last Wednesday, and I just went to see, because I went and saw Carson when he came too. I just wanted to see what their base looks like. Like, I have them on Twitter. I follow them. They follow me. So I know what they look like on Twitter. I wanted to see what they both look like in person. Carson's is older, evangelical. Trump's was definitely middle class, blue collar. Talked to a black doctor that came down from Maryland to see him. So, and my husband and my 30-year-old support him while I support Cruz. This would be the first time, by the way, they don't vote in the primary the way I asked them to vote, because, you know, I pay attention to politics. So, you know, they pretty much take advice from me. And this will be the first time they're voting a whole nother way, and there's a reason for that. My husband's IT. He used to make six figures. H-1B visas have cut those jobs down to $70,000-$75,000 a year, where they used, I mean, literally, it used to be $120,000 plus bonuses, talking about bonuses. It isn't that way anymore in Northern Virginia because of H-1B visas. So Trump, of course, addresses that. And then my son had a job, lost that job, went back out to get another job, and you can't get $15 an hour. Not that I would want the government to do that anyway, but those used to be $15 to $20 an hour jobs, but you have so many illegals in Northern Virginia from Mexico, that's why Trump appeals to him. So,
Jaden, what's H-1BB? What is H-1?
H-1B visas are, so Cruz was pushing a 500% increase in those as well, so we disagree on that. So what those are is, if you had read about the Disney story where the workers came over from India and the IT people had to train them to take their jobs.
Yep, to take
that's
their jobs.
What
I
those are.
It.
Right, right. So
yeah, the scam, you know, just to go into this a little bit, justification, so-called justification for H-1B visas is that there is a shortage of qualified workers to take jobs in the tech industry.
Yeah.
So
that's bull crap.
So the industry has gotten Congress to expand the number of visas for people with job skills that are supposedly in great demand and where there's a shortage. But it's a government system, and it's being manipulated outrageously because there is no shortage. There are plenty of science, technology, engineering, and math graduates coming out of U.S. colleges every year.
Correct.
But they're having a lot of trouble finding jobs because of the H-1B visa program, which where a company sponsors somebody from overseas to come take a job, and that person has to make a commitment to that company to work there, and that's a condition of holding the visa. So obviously, market forces being what they are, the company is therefore in a secure negotiating position compared to a citizen worker from America, so they can pay less, and they also have, just enormous amount of power over that foreign worker once he's here, because if he doesn't toe the line and loses the job, he can get booted out of the country.
Not happening either.
Yeah, so that's the H-1B program. It's being flagrantly abused by corporate America and is one of the drivers of a lot of the layoffs that you're seeing.
Well, you know, the government was also getting rid of a lot of IT that were contractors. And that started wholesale in 2009 under something where, I don't know, you probably don't even know about it. It's out there. If you do a search, it'll come up. There's something called a circular from the White House called an A-76 circular. It came out somewhere in the 1960s, the Eisenhower days. And it says, among other things, that the federal government will not compete with the private sector for goods or services, and that there has to be a cost study done to examine what's the cheapest way, what's the benefit of the taxpayers, cheaper for the private industry or the public sector or private sector to do the work. So what they've done is they've perverted that as well, and they mutated to the point that the government came in and said, okay, contractors are out of control. Obama went insane with it and said, that's it. We're going to get rid of all the contractors and we're going to take everything in-house. And they started getting rid of contractors. Then they went in, if you track it, I hear a voice in the background.
Sorry.
Oh, no problem. But then what they started doing was they started going into where these guys had the jobs, the IT operators, the contractors. And the government went up to them and said, how would you like to work for the federal government? What's in it for me? Well, you have guaranteed work. You get benefits. You're not going to make as much as you're making now, but it's guaranteed work and your vacation time. And so they started converting the contractors into federal employees. This is before everything hit the fan. And the companies like IBM and whatever and the big industry, they went back to the government and said, under the A-76, what you're doing is you're poaching our employees, and this is illegal. You're competing with us. And the attorneys went back to the federal government and said, they're right. You are. You're competing with them. This is okay. So Obama got a hold of Schumer and the rest of them. They've suspended all A-76 cost studies ever since 2009. They've been completely suspended, and they've been in place since the 60s. So now there's nothing to tie their hands when it comes to how much money they spend or anything else, except they didn't count on the economy tanking and not having the money. So now, little by little, I'm a government contractor. That's why I know all this. That's why I deal with it. Over the past 2 years now, they've started little by little coming back to contractors going, can you put in a bid for this? Can you? It's all part of a game.
The government screws up everything that it touches. The bigger it is, the worse it gets.
Absolutely.
And as the, you know, and of course, this is what's driving this enormous cascading tide of fury in the Republican Party, because we're supposed to be the small government party. And it just never seems to work. We get the House, nothing happens. We get the Senate, nothing happens. We got George W. Bush in the presidency, and the government got bigger than ever.
Bought and paid whores, honey. Bought and paid whores.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I mean, so people who are, you know, getting angry at Trump, and, you know, I understand stylistically why Trump is not people's cup of tea. And the same thing for Cruz. I mean, from a different angle. But somebody's got to come in who can shake the system up badly, because right now it is so dysfunctional.
Yep. It's true.
Well, apparently it's Johnny Angel.
Yeah, Johnny.
Yeah. How you doing, buddy?
Hey.
So that's why I brought the point of voting, and now it's your Christmas party, but I want to bring this up. We voted for all this. We voted ourselves right into this. These people are running for office because they make money. That's their deal.
Yep.
It's all about voting, and I've said it before, and I know how you feel about this, but what if you just don't vote for them? Just opt out. Just leave me alone.
Yeah, but then they run the show.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to go into that discussion again, but I'm glad you brought it up because, and actually, that's discussed in great detail on the archive of Johnny's show, Free Fire Friday. So
right.
I think that people can get a very interesting, impassioned discussion of that is available so I can drive traffic to his show.
It's just a different aspect.
The one thing that wasn't mentioned on the show that I'll bring up as far as in my case, and I heard it from several people, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go for it. They said, to change the system, become involved in the system. Start at the very bottom. So I did. I went out and I became a committeeman for the Republican Party in my area. Now, as a committeeman, yeah, you got to go door to door, and you've got to get the signatures for the petitions, and you've got to deliver and go door to door and all that stuff. But you're at the ground floor of it, and you get to help make the decisions for who the candidates for your district in your town or your state. And you're involved with the system. Now, if enough of us got involved, and enough of us got involved, became committeemen, we'd be able to change it.
Oh, Mike, you are going to be canonized by our good buddy Warrior. That is exactly, and I wish he were on the show because he's a primary. Mover in publicizing the effort to get people to get involved in the Republican Party at the precinct level, and his name Dan Schultz. He writes at Breitbart.com. He has a website. I think it's precinctproject.us, something like that, on how to get involved, No, just shorthand here.
Yeah.
In the old days, up to maybe the 90s, mid-90s, late 90s, the political party establishments used to listen to polls. So if public sentiment was moving in a certain direction, you know, not perfectly, but over time, they would recognize what the public was saying and act on it. Now they are so entrenched, it doesn't work anymore. You have to shake the system from any way that you can get at it, and the precinct level is the way to get at it in the Republican Party. And I just wish Dan were on the show tonight because he could really talk better than I can.
No, I saw in tomatoes. I got. Can I from Free Fire Friday? Can I say one thing about this? Is what gives anybody the right to vote the other 50% down to being murdered? Look, I'll put it to you this way.
Yeah, I know that's a theoretical discussion that Johnny colorfully put it to me one night on Free Fire Friday. Since Anthony is here, all the culprits are represented. He said, "What if he and Anthony got together?" There was a revolver on the table, and what if he and Anthony got together? And since they knew each other, being Army veterans and stuff, what would prevent them from blowing me away with the revolver? And then I started thinking about other shows to listen to.
And I love you like a brother, but I mean that's exactly what people are doing to each other, and they don't realize it because they're having these indiscriminate discussions about Trump, Hillary. It does not matter who is in charge. They're all going to take the revolver and blow you away.
Well, you know, I, again, this is something where we disagree, but I do see the logic in there. And I have to say, I mean, if real change doesn't happen soon, and I don't mean, you know, 20 years from now, I mean, we've got maybe 4 to 8 years left before the centrifugal forces in the current system will just tear the thing apart. Unless somebody really steps in and starts fixing things. But I mean, that's a fundamental question. I mean, I don't think we're at that point yet, and you think we are, and, you know, we're here, you know, it's just time will tell. I want to recognize another caller, area code 205, who has been holding patiently.
Hey, Street, it's Mel.
Ah, Ms. Warbington. Or I shouldn't say that because
yeah.
I don't. You like that. Mrs. Warbington.
That's fine. Yes, Mrs. is better.
Mrs. is better. Melody Warbington. Met her.
I earn that title every day.
The Private Lists and Unified Patriots. And Mel is very active in the Republican Party. And in fact, was at a Christmas party tonight?
Yeah, tonight. My local Shelby County, reddest county one of the reddest counties in the country, we had our Christmas party tonight, and I'm happy to report that in our straw poll, Jeb Bush didn't get any votes. Lindsey Graham didn't get any votes.
Oh, good.
I mean, it was just so cool. Cruz won with, we had 43 votes total. Cruz had 21. Rubio had 11. Fiorina had 2. Carson had 1. Huckabee had 1. And I don't think anybody else got any votes.
Now, Shelby
awesome.
County, that's in Alabama. What does that encompass? So what?
It's outside of Birmingham.
Okay.
So pretty much in the middle of the state. But Pelham is our county seat, but Pelham's pretty small even by most standards. But we're kind of a, even though it's a county, it's kind of a suburb of Birmingham.
Suburb, okay. So suburban type voters and by and large.
Well, it's actually a lot of country.
A lot of country, okay.
Yeah, very, very rural. I mean, there are some pockets of suburban, but it's very rural.
Okay, so.
It is one of the fastest growing counties in the country.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you know, Cruz, and Jade had made this point earlier. I mean, Cruz, and I'm somewhat sympathetic to this, that the dynamic of this race could be Trump is the battering ram that shakes things up. And what's open to question is, does he have enough momentum to make it all the way to the top? Or will he, for whatever reason, either he decides he gets sick of it or he destructs in some way, and then Cruz is there to pick up the pieces. You know, my, you know, inclination is that I'm not sure Cruz has the electability that Trump has, so I'm kind of sympathetic to the argument Vassar Bushmills wrote about in Unified Patriots, where you elect Trump first, and he, you know, he kicks enough ass in Washington to shake things up so much that he can get succeeded by a Cruz, and then you have a generation of change that has enough time in office to really change things. But I don't know. I mean, it may be Trump doesn't make it, and then Cruz picks up the pieces, and you know, then we see for those who vote.
Well, I think that gets down to the delegates at the convention, really, is where I'm thinking that is going to happen. Because you're so March 1st, the SEC of primaries is delegated out, I believe, the top three divvy up the delegates. And here in Virginia, in my opinion, the top three will be Trump, Cruz, and Carson. So when you get to convention, I don't believe that Trump will have what he needs. And again, we come back to the art of the deal. So at that point, either Carson, Cruz hand them over their delegates to Trump, or Trump turns his delegates loose to Cruz. And that's the deal. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. He's not going to get there with the delegates he needs to have because of the way the GOP rewrote the rules in 2014 to stop a movement conservative like Cruz from winning. They just didn't count on Donald Trump. So that's why I think it ends up being Cruz, in my opinion. That could change. I mean, you know, maybe Trump is all in and maybe he gets those votes. I can't see it with the way the primaries were set up and the delegates being, you know, handed out. It's winner take all after the 14th of March. So, I mean, he could steamroll right through that at that point. But that's why I think it's Cruz at the end.
I don't know. There's a lot of anger out there that we don't hear from. But, I mean, I see it in the street. I see in neighbors and everyone else. And I do my own little game, even when I go to the market. You know, you're scanning out and you're swiping your credit card, and I'll look at the terminal, and there's people in line with me, and the cashiers know me. I'm always in the same market. And I'll look at it and go, vote Hillary? Just to see the reaction. I've had old ladies turn to me and go, bullshit. There's no way I'd vote. Does it really say that? And then it'll start, and everybody will start talking, just to get people talking. And every single time it works, people start talking and saying, there's no way that woman's going to get it. There's no, and I'm in New York.
And wow.
So just a little experiment, and to have people start opening up like that in public, while you're waiting in line, there's anger out there. And the media, no matter how they try to downplay it, people are really pissed.
Well, you know, the problem is, and this is Johnny again, is that we're putting way too much confidence in these people in the first place. I think these people don't rule our lives. All they are is little, they go to Washington. They're supposed to just sit there and defend our country. That's it. If you read the Constitution, they're not supposed to rule our lives the way they do. And they rule our lives forever. I mean, it's like one election after an election after election after an election. It's all a great big election. And they consume our thought process. I mean, it's almost like we have to feed off of that. We have to hunt constantly for somebody to take charge. And why do you need somebody to take charge?
We need somebody that's not part of the system to get in there with a baseball bat and walk through the corridors of the White House and with Congress and the Senate and to take control to get rid of some of these ministries that operate autonomously. And that's what a lot of it that you're seeing. They make their own rules and everything. There's no oversight. But Trump, as a businessman, would come in there and look at it through a different set of eyes, not one of a professional politician. But as a businessman and say, is this good for business? Is this helping the economy and generating business? Or is it castrating business and the private sector? And this is where, I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, I put in a bid for one contract. I was outbid by somebody that was part of the Democrats, tied in with the Democratic Party. They gave it to him for $10,000 more than what I bid. And I complained. Nothing happened. I called Washington and I complained. And they agreed with me. They said, look, this, you're absolutely right. This is fraud. You have to contact Chuck Schumer. God help me. I know.
Oh, God.
And I said, okay, whatever. So I met with his people twice. Within a week and a half, I had federal agents at my door. They audited me.
Mm-mm-mm.
Now,
well,
this is small business. That's how you treat small business? This is how I asked the agent. I said, what are you doing here? You know, every cent I've made, what are you, and they said, well, we can't tell you what initiated this. I said, you're being used as a tool by your bosses in the system to intimidate me, the small businessman. Is this how this is? Does this help the economy?
They don't care about small business. That's the thing you have to do.
They don't care.
They are socialists. They are a socialist system. They don't care about small business.
They don't care.
They're not for the free market. They're for the federal dollar. They're for taking money from the taxpayers and giving it to the unions or whatever buddies they have.
This is why Trump scares them. Trump scares them because he's a businessman.
That's true. I would agree with that. Trump scares them.
He scares them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it always comes down to, you know, there's no perfect solution. So where do you place your bets? I mean, that's to get, to get movement in the direction that you want to go in, as opposed to what we've got now, even with a Republican Congress.
To blow it all up with Trump, that's how I feel, too. Cruz is my guy, but I am so looking at this guy blowing up both parties, especially the GOP, who deserves it like nobody's business. I want them all having a heart attack as we go into 2016. So, I mean, that would make my day. But, yeah, I mean, we're pretty much like frogs in a boiling pot, and they've been putting pressures on us for decades, and now we're fighting back. So,
I don't know what to do to handle them. Yeah, it's a very important election. Now, you know, with respect to Hillary, I think that what you'll find in the Democratic Party is that her support is a mile wide and an inch deep. Mm-hmm. But a lot of Democrats do not like her. And, of course, you know, independents don't like her, and, of course, Republicans loathe her. That's kind of, you know, talk about the curveballs the system can throw, because she still has a lot of legal trouble, and Obama doesn't like her. The FBI is still on her case. I don't think we've heard the last of everything related to those emails. So that's kind of, you know, in terms of manipulating the system, I'm just curious, and this is kind of a pet theory of mine, that if somebody really wanted to play games with the system, they manipulate it so that there is an indictment of Hillary either right before the Democratic convention that would throw the Democratic choice into an open convention, and then Biden could step in, or even worse, before, or even worse than that, after the election, assuming Hillary won the election, and then have Democratic electors manipulate the election in the Electoral College. I mean, Johnny, are you still on the air?
Asking for a civil war if they do that. They're asking for it. I think that's what they're trying to get people to see how much we're going to keep taking. I think that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are at a point where we really are going to be pushing the envelope to see, can the system hold together? Because it's that phrase that they have in engineering, you test to destruction. Well, Obama has certainly really moved in that direction. And one more big government Democrat like Hillary, who has dropped all pretense of being a centrist like her husband was, you will test the system to destruction now with $20 trillion in debt and the kind of national security issues we have with the Islamic issue, with the Islamic terror issue, and all the immigration that we've had from the Middle East. You really are at the point of testing it to destruction.
It's Johnny again.
You dropped. I put you back.
Well, I had to call my consigliere, but to no avail. I wanted to interject into this conversation how important this is that.
Johnny, don't use big words. I'm in New York. I'm in New York, and I'll get arrested. Don't say interject again, please. Don't use big words.
Oh,
you're
going to
get me locked. You're going to get me locked up. I'm not allowed to use big words in this state anymore. Don't do that.
Okay, I'll try to be good. But the thing is that it does not matter who or what is in power. The problem is the power. Hillary, she can absolutely, and I'll guarantee this, and I'm going to say this, she's going to be the president of the United States.
Yes,
and if you don't think I'm right, check the odds on the internet. Go on the internet right now. Hey, I'm a football guy, right? I check the odds. I bet on football games. I know how it works. Check the odds on football. Check the odds on Hillary. Hillary's going to win. She could get on TV right now, and tell every American that they all suck, and she's still going to win. The reason why.
Well, I would suggest go back to 2007 and check the odds on her then too, and it didn't happen. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, happen now because.
Hold on.
I want to say one thing because you have enough people on welfare and the government dime, and she promises the government dime, where she promised that if she wins, she will continue to pay the government dime. So she was going to steal from the working people and pay the government dime.
I agree with that, but I think it's time for me to play what I intend to play to condition Johnny to the approaching Hillary administration. Hold on a second.
Wow.
Conditioning Johnny for life in the Hillary administration once the robot is placed in the house. Continue.
Has anybody checked the odds? No! Go on the internet.
No, because odds fail. So I'm not going to check the odds. The odds were that she was going to be in 2008.
That's an interesting question, too, because I know what you're talking about, that the professional bookie types are giving Hillary the favorite odds. But the assumption is
the Senate wasn't going to go Republican based on the professionals and the odds
in 2014. The election will be a conventional election, and I don't think it will be a conventional election. This election,
no,
I'm not sure what kind of election it will be, because if a few more incidents happen where the shit hits the fan, it's very unpredictable where the electorate is going to go.
Security Moms, 2004. I know, I was one. So first vote for Republican George Bush, 2004. So that's because I'm a September 11th. Changeover from Democrat. So Security Moms, Kerry was going to win that election without a doubt. But Moms, and really everybody at that point, because I hate that woman crap, but everybody said, wait a minute, we can't afford that. Kerry will get us killed. And Kerry lost, and George Bush won. And I was one of those new voters. And that's what you're going to see in this election. I think somewhere over on Breitbart, Kudlow just did a write-up over at Breitbart, and he says, I've changed my mind. We've got to stop immigration. We got to stop from the Muslim countries. And, you know, when the rich, and that's how I tweeted it out, by the way, when the rich start thinking like the rest of us, that they're not safe and secure, that's when you see something different. And
yeah,
that's
Kudlow is, yeah, for
no.
people who don't follow, Kudlow, Larry Kudlow is, he writes for National Review and other conservative publications. He's a classic open borders, free market capitalist,
yep.
very, very pro-corporation, thus pro-immigration guy, and he has changed his mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the problem, the San Bernardino shooting, the whole imagery of it, community center, people, the husband and wife shooting up people that they've known for years, they were assimilated into the community. It really brought home to people the kind of time bomb, unpredictable time bomb aspect of this phase of the national security fight, if you will.
So,
9/11, as traumatic as that was, it happened on airplanes. Airplanes are up in the sky. They're enclosed pieces of aluminum. You put the TSA in, and the public thinking was everybody is now safe.
Yeah.
Well, this brought
home
the whole new ball game.
And all those stood there and said, Bush stood there and said, they'll hear from us. And we knew that they would. You saw it in his face. That's what you expect of a president. That's what you're not getting now.
And plus, those guys, that couple targeted people who were, quote, nice to them.
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't just a stranger. They didn't just go into some place and start shooting a place up. They went in and started shooting up people that knew them and had treated them kindly, you know, the way that we're supposed to treat Muslims in order to bring them around.
Mm-hmm.
This brought it to the American dinner table, the average person's dinner table, whereas just like you said, an airplane, you're a little bit disconnected. It happened with an airplane. TSA is going to protect me. But now this brought it home to the dinner table where they got the feeling of it could happen anywhere, and now they're getting it. But
and there's a reason why
understand.
Gun sales went up.
No, here's a Italian tomatoes. Are you there? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right.
28 months in Iraq. I spent 28 months there, okay? I was in Mosul. I was in Baghdad. Okay? There's good people there. There are. There's good people there. But when you have a society that believes that you have, you know, I know I'm speaking from Free Fire Friday. We have a society that believes that, well, we have to have the government, and I've heard this before, I've heard it from several of your callers, that the government has to protect us. The government will not protect you. That's not their job. Your job is to protect you. Your job is to carry a gun if you have to and protect yourselves. And if you can't, you find somebody who will. But that needs to happen. And it needs to happen now, because this is not going to get any better.
On an individual level, you're correct. But at the border, you're not. That is the government's job.
These folks from Syria, you forget about the government. Oh, forget about them. That's not their job. They will not do that.
It is their job, but they won't do it.
Right.
That's the problem. That's what we're trying to, you know, fix it through the electoral process. But you know, the argument that, you know, Johnny is making is a part Second Amendment argument, which I totally agree with him.
Which is great. That, I totally agree with that, too, on a level of walking out my door, et cetera. But it is the government's job to protect the borders and who comes in the country.
No, it's your job. You are a United States citizen.
I'm not going to the border.
Are
you, Johnny? Aren't
you
up in New York?
You damn right I will. You are a part of the militia. If you're a born man,
go on down to the border, for goodness sake.
You damn right I will.
In the spirit of our Christmas party show, I don't want to get too insulted.
There's always a fight at a Christmas party. Come on.
We don't want to get too involved in it. But the argument is, and you know, There are two arguments. What is the place of the Second Amendment in our system? And there I'm always going to side with Johnny. Always, always, always.
He's absolutely right.
And then there is the other thing. What is the primary purpose of the government? Why do we have one?
Right.
And one of the, you know, the core, you know, reason for having a government is to protect the country against foreign invasion. It's the first
the country
that any government has.
The country.
Foreign and domestic.
Right.
And who are the government? Who is the government?
Well, then we
who
go into the constitutional thing about how to keep the government accountable to the people, which is, a third argument. But
you just said
we the people are the government.
The people,
they're not listening.
That's what I'm saying. We the people. We the people need to bear arms against these folks that are trying to destroy our country. We are the people. That's why I say we're the militia. Hey, when them guys started out in 1776,
our founders would be shooting by now. Nobody's going to do that.
You're damn right. But yeah, we're far from that. We're far from that.
But I'm just saying. We are.
Ma'am, I don't know your name, but you got a name. What's your name, ma'am?
Oh, I'm jaded by politics.
Okay. Look at Israel. Just look at them. We were them 200 years ago.
Yeah, well, Johnny, I mean, you know, look at Israel. Israel has one of the most powerful militaries in the world. It's a citizen army, but they have a strong national government with a strong national military, and they are not hesitant at all about using it.
And there's 6 million people. There's 315 million people in the United States. We can never, ever hold ourselves up to any other country at all. We are completely separate and different from those countries. And based on the numbers, the closest to us would be India and China. So, and those aren't good governments over there. So we really are different than everybody else.
Well, absolutely. And I've been trying to say that for the whole time.
I hear you,
man. You know what I'm saying? You need to bear arms against these people that are trying to destroy us.
Well,
at the end of the day, we will get them.
The Second Amendment is to have a check on the government. I mean, there are two reasons, because when the Second Amendment was written, foreign invasion was a very near possibility. I mean, from the Indian tribes, from the British in Canada, et cetera. So the armed militia was partly to protect against foreign invasion and partly to protect against a power grab by the federal government. I mean, it is intrinsic part of our system.
Part of the
thing that we have to do as a political movement is to get that historical memory live in people's minds again.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Nobody's
because
nobody's going to go up against the
Johnny
government
is
and
right.
With
the,
them.
The mush that is popular culture is giving people a message that, you know, this all-wise, all-knowing, distant central government never gets anything wrong and will always be there to protect you. Well, it won't be. It can break down. It makes mistakes. It can be corrupted. It can be perverted. Government, you know, it's not enough.
Thank you, Italian Tomatoes. That was excellent. That's what I wanted to try to say. And they will screw you in the end. Even if you go to protect your government, believe me, there's a lot of vets in this country, and I'm a veteran. There's a lot of vets that will tell you straight up when people always say, and I've heard this before, they go, you spent 25 years in the military. Why do you hate the government so bad? Because I know it good. Yeah.
You know, there's a great bronze plaque that's in a Lincoln Monument Memorial that's in Ohio that shows Abraham Lincoln, a bunch of politicians and soldiers behind him, and kneeling in front of Abraham Lincoln, starting to get up, is a newly freed slave. And Abraham, in one hand, in his right hand, is taking away the shackles. And they actually put handcuffs. It's in part of the bronze plaque, taking away the shackles of slavery. And in his left hand, he's handing the slave a musket.
Cool. That's cool.
Now, I mean, does that speak volumes right there? Here, you've earned your freedom. Now defend it.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, that's very
simple.
But we're
not defending it. We're not going to get a bunch of people to pony up and militia up and take our government.
No,
it's not.
No, no.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen. That's my point to Johnny, I guess.
But on the personal level, though, it is.
You have to protect yourself.
You have to protect yourself. And I'll tell you, that's been underscored by what my wife and I went through. We were in the Northridge earthquake. We lived in L.A. during the L.A., the riots, Rodney King, O.J. I've seen it. I've been, and it's not pretty. And after the North, we were right there. We were Granada Hills, right next to Northridge. When the Northridge quake, I hit. I was putting out a cigarette. And right then, we had gang members, Mexican gang members, going through the neighborhoods while people were home, and they were looting, and they were running up, and they were looking into homes to see what they could loot. And we called. It took a while. Back then, the phone was built in between the seats of the car. And anyway, I got through to Devonshire Division, to the police, and the cop said, we can't get over anywhere near you. Try calling Foothill Division. And that's a little bit further out, but try them. And it took me about another 45 minutes to get through to them, and I told them I got guys with pickup trucks, gang members, they got barbed wire tattooed around their necks, and they're going house to house. And the cops said, stay away from them, get their license plate number. There's no way we can get up San Fernando Road to get anywhere near you. And I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, listen to me, can you defend yourself? And I said, yeah, I certainly can defend. He said, if you have no other options, do what you have to do and then call us when you're done. Do you understand what I'm telling you?
Absolutely.
I said, I understand what you're saying. He said, good luck. You're on your own.
There you go. And you are. That's a truism. That is true always.
It just reminds me of a couple of things. Number one, the first one, if you ever run across it, Charlton Heston, before he died, did his autobiography, and he went into a lot of detail about the riots in Los Angeles in the early 90s.
Yep.
And how afterwards all these anti-gun liberals in Hollywood started approaching him for advice on firearms and where to get them and how to get trained with them. And these were, you know, your typical bleeding heart liberal Hollywood type.
I saw that firsthand, too.
Because it hit home. And then the second thing I wanted to mention is that as far as the police are concerned, I mean, the police are between a rock and a hard place because, the government worshippers are putting more and more emphasis on the police to control communities, but at the same time, they are putting more and more emphasis on prosecuting police whenever they do things especially the liberal community doesn't like. And the police are starting to understand the system is evolving in an unworkable direction, and more of them are coming out in the open saying what Mike just said. In a crisis situation, the police may not be there for you.
Nope.
You have to take that as a possibility.
Well, Antonio, the thing you got to remember is this. Is the police are not there to protect you. They're there for a paycheck.
Right.
My sister is a state patrol. You can talk to any cop. They wanted me to be a cop when I got out of the Army, and I said, I will not do it. No. I could have made $100,000 a year in North Pole, Alaska. $100,000 a year. Are you kidding me? To drive around in a cop car and react to crimes. React, because that's all you do is react. Once in a while, you might catch one. Now, this is the point I'm trying to make. The police are not there to protect you. They're just there to react. It's all reaction force.
No. During the Rodney King riots, I went to the Pony Express gun store in Reseda. It's gone now. It went out of business. And I walked in, and the place was packed. Just to underscore what you said about the liberals. And I sat there, and a lot of the gun guys, we know each other. I mean, even though it's L.A., you can pick out who's pro-gun, obviously. So we're sitting there. They divided the group into two lines, first-time gun buyers and the rest of us. And it was a long line, and you could see they were embarrassed, they were nervous, and they'd go up to the counter, and it was always the same thing. What would be a good first time? I've never fired a gun before. What would be something good for home defense? And they were selling shotguns, and the rest of us are sitting there watching this saying, these people aren't trained. They don't even know how to load it. You're being handing these people a shotgun. This is nuts. This is insane. No training, never took them to a range, and yet now they're armed. God help all of us. And then I got up to the counter, and I've got two CHP guys behind me in uniform. You know, like, remember Chips? Remember the show? So they're in their outfit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're behind me, and I'm thinking, oh, Christ, I'm going to sound like a maniac now, and these guys behind me. So I get up there. I said, give me two boxes of double odd buck and 12-gauge, and the cop tapped me on the shoulder. And he said, why do you want the double odd buck? Don't go for that. You're going to do more damage at close range with a number 4 buck than you will a double odd buck. And I looked at the cop behind him, and the cop behind him is nodding his head, said, yeah, go with number 4 buck. And then he turned to the guy behind the counter and said, give him the number 4 buck, not the double odd. And I said, oh, thanks for that. And I went back and I told my wife, here I am discussing with two police officers what a better ammunition would be to use on a human being.
That's
something's
right.
Worked,
well,
something
actually,
has worked with
actually,
it. But this is reality.
Actually, A state patrol officer is the wrong person to talk about guns and
yeah.
and shooting because they do very little shooting. Even the California Highway Patrol is as high speed as they think they are. You'd be way better off doing your own experiments, doing your own reloading, taking your own double odd buck, and this is a free fire fight thing, but I don't want to
make a
mandatory. Johnny, that's all well and good, but that is not going to be the experience of most people. They are going
right.
to rely on
yes,
the civil
but
service of the cops to protect
right.
them. They even we know they're not going to protect us when
right.
minutes counts. They'll when they'll be here in minutes when it takes seconds. We understand
well,
that, but the majority of people rely on the cops to keep the peace.
Right.
That's dumb, because when I was in Baghdad, I'll tell you this. I went to a house, and we just went into the house. It ain't like the United States. You just, hey, we're in. Now we're in. So I know what it's like to be the pusher, the Nazi, okay? And I picked
if
this one guy's
will.
Gun up. Well, call it what you want. I picked this one guy's gun up, and I ejected the round, and I said, this is a blank. What are you doing? And he said, I'm a Christian. I said, well, that's fine. I'm glad I am too. However, why is there a blank in your gun? He goes, because the Bible says I'm not supposed to kill anybody. And I was like, so what's the blank for? Well, I was hoping to scare him. Now, this is in Mosul, Iraq, where they are taking drills and drilling drill bits into people's brains, hanging people, cutting their heads off, bombing people. This guy was following the rule of the letter of the Bible, where I will not harm my friend, and he had a blank in his gun.
But
wow.
I understand that we should take care of ourselves, what I and I do and you do and everybody on this call does. However, not everybody thinks like we do, and
no.
they do depend on the police to keep the peace in their neighborhood. So, like my neighborhood of Herndon, is absolutely, it has its normal crime and stuff. Nobody's ever come to my house. Of course, if they saw a sticker to my car, they wouldn't even think about it. But, that's different. I'm different. But my neighbors, I've talked to them. One is from India. He's now a citizen. They just had a baby We were talking about guns. He'd like to get one. His wife doesn't want him to have one. So all I'm saying is that we're not going to be out there policing the streets in our neighborhood. That's what our tax dollars are paying for. That's how most people see that. So, I mean, yes, they're only there to serve and clean up. I know that. I say it all the time on Twitter. That's what they're there to do. But most people are not us, and so that they depend on some kind of sanity with the police department. I'm just saying, I don't dismiss police out of hand. What we need to do together as a people.
No, I'll tell you one thing that was funny though, right there with the Northridge quake. I had one neighbor that was a raving liberal. This guy was brutal. He called me. He said that I was a part of the plague on society because I was a gun collector and. And people like you create all our problems. You're a plague. You're a menace to society. And you're a gun collector and blah, 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 blah. All right. Well, the first day of that earthquake, he came to me, knocked on my door, and asked if he could borrow something for his house, honest to God. And I told him, I said, there's no way. You called me a plague on society. That's not the reason I'm not giving it to you. You're not trained with it. You don't know what you're doing. I'm just going to hand a firearm to you. It's not going to happen.
Well, you know, I mean, that's what I would tell my neighbors, too.
Approach, we only have 4 minutes left. I think that, you know, that kind of that last remark just illustrates people are having a collision with reality.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are beginning to realize that what they thought reality was when Obama was elected, reality has changed.
Yep.
So we're all trying to figure out, you know, where do we go from here? What do we do with our vote? What do we do in our homes? What do we, you know, what do we do to make a more secure society? And we all have to make our decisions as citizens as, you know, responsibly as we can and, you know, hope for the best. Now, Johnny has different views than I have. And you know, all the different people on this call have a very, you know, they all have different sets of ideas. We just have to, you know, pursue what we think is right and hope for the best. But the overriding thing that's uniting us all is the reality has changed. The ground has shifted.
Yeah.
We are just in a new situation, and it can't be swept under the rug any longer.
And you know, one thing I want to bring up quick before the show ends, everybody's demonizing the hell out of Trump and because this thing with his comment about not bringing in the Muslims, and then I'm expanding on it. He's saying basically to suspend the immigration process until we can fix it, and he's right, because I'll tell you what, and nothing underscores this worse, better. Then in the chat room, I'm putting a link right there. Take a look at this link before we get cut off. This is how they handle elections in Iraq because they cannot identify who their own citizens are.
Mm-hmm.
The Iraqi government has done this since the beginning. So that way
they put a finger
protect
in the ink. Finger
right.
In the ink.
Now, if here's a Middle Eastern country that can't even identify their own citizens and they've got to rely on purple ink on their fingers, and you mean to turn the United Nations?
Yeah, I was there. I did that.
Okay, hold on. The United Nations is going to tell us that they can vet these people when Iraq can't even vet these people.
I know.
They have to use purple ink. Now, I'd love to see Trump bring that up and say, go ahead, liberals, explain to me, should we start using purple ink to identify them?
It might not be the worst idea.
Again, one of the things that Trump does is, you know, shake things up by calling the government stupid, which it is, and, you know, just calling them out on all the crap that they've pulled, where they overpromise and underdeliver and then make all these mistakes and then they lie about it on top of everything else. And that's why this election and this whole part of life that we're in is so volatile. I mean, things are really... Well, we're about out of time, so
hey, great Jonathan and Tomatoes, thank you. Hey, you got to have an election on your show at one point.
Well, we'll cross that bridge later.
It was great chatting with you all, by the way.
You
good conversation.
Nice speaking with you.
and I'm going to make audio copies and then distribute it all over the internet. Thank you all for coming to
thank
our Christmas
guys,
party and drive safe
America.
And have a great weekend.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold. I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I can't get warm without your hand to hold. The radiator's hissing, still I need your kissing to keep me from freezing each night. I got a hot water bottle, but nothing I got'll take the place of you holding me tight. I got steam heat, I got steam heat, I got steam heat, but I need your love to keep away the cold. They told me to shovel more coal in the boiler. They told me to shovel more coal in the boiler. They told me to shovel more coal in the boiler. But that don't do no good.